Well, top of the morning to you all. Welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive and often deadly myths which are associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, with military and economic schemes, and sometimes with spy themes, with intelligence gathering. That's kind of an oxymoron, but nonetheless, that's where we find ourselves these days. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to understand what is actually occurring while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 15 to 20 years. And folks, that's all you have left. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His is the lone reliable and credible voice in an exceedingly corrupt world. Our phone number, it's toll-free. If you'd like to participate in this discussion, it's 877-300-7645. We've spent considerable time telling the story of David Headley, because Dianne Feinstein is head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, used the capture and conviction of David Headley as proof that it was A-OK for America's to the government to negate, to disregard the rule of law, its constitution and the Fourth Amendment, to seize people's private information without due process, without cause, without justification, because old David Headley, he'd been put behind bars because of PRISM. Well, we spent 4 or 5 days telling his story, and we're through with it now. But what we learned is that rather than protecting America from a terrorist act as a result of PRISM helping to capture and convict David Headley, that none of that was true. That using the old-fashioned ways, wives who had been beaten by their husbands, telling the FBI that their husbands were engaged in terrorist acts and that were specifically planning a terrorist act that took place 1 and 3 years later, depending on which beaten wife you prefer, directly to James Clapper, who was serving in the intelligence community at the time, we had a full confession of precisely what was going to happen in Mumbai and did nothing to stop it. Making matters worse, we find that David Headley, the terrorist that Dianne Feinstein wanted the world to believe, that PRISM had led to the capture and conviction, was actually working for the U.S. government. He was an agent for the DEA and for the CIA, engaged with Laskhar-e-Taiba and the Pakistani ISI. And if that were not bad enough, just one thought, Scott, if that were not bad enough, Dianne Feinstein's Senate has provided some $20 billion of American aid and weapons to Pakistan, knowing full well that the Pakistani government has been the world's leading sponsor of terrorism for the last 20 years.
And it's because he worked for us that they don't want to send him back to go to trial there, correct?
Correct, which leads to the ultimate hypocrisy. Here's the United States scolding other nations like China and Russia for not exporting old Snowden related to his release that the U.S. was spying on Americans without the guarantees of privacy provided by the U.S. Constitution, and it is saying that by rule of law, you've got to send him back to us. And yet, what happened with David Headley, who was the lone surviving agent directly responsible for killing 166 people in India? When India wanted him sent to India to stand trial for the atrocity he committed in that country, the United States said, no, we're not going to do it.
They said they can't.
They can't. Guess why they can't? Because David Headley's confessions that he worked for the CIA and for the DEA and that the U.S. government had full knowledge of the Mumbai terrorist attacks 3 years before they occurred with precisely the sites that would be attacked and by whom, it makes the United States complicit in the terrorist act. And so that's why he wasn't sent to India for trial. So by mentioning David Headley, not only is Dianne Feinstein, the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee that approved PRISM and the Verizon spying episode, not only did she lie to the American people, what she did is thumb her nose at the American people, saying, I'm going to give you this man's name to get you off my back to justify what we have done, when in fact anyone who took the time to read about the history of David Headley would realize that all that name does is make the United States appear stunningly morally corrupt.
And yet nobody does that. I mean, obviously we are, but
yes.
I'm not seeing it anywhere else.
No, and we don't have a big enough podium or microphone to change the debate or thinking overall in America. You know, we are simply an individual and a couple of individuals trying their best to awaken people, but if we're going to resolve the problem of the moral decadence of the United States government, that voice is going to have to come from many more people and also from people in much higher positions as it relates to their audience. It is an extraordinarily sad situation. I want to start with another story, and Scott, continue to participate here with me. James Clapper is the very fellow that the two wives of David Headley confessed that he was planning to perpetrate the murderous terrorist assault in Mumbai, killing 166 people. They were very specific. They told him exactly what targets and who he was working with, and gave absolute proof that this is the plan that he was going to carry out. It was James Clapper that received that information and chose to completely disregard it. Well, he said that PRISM, which was created in 2008, beginning, by the way, with Microsoft, was aimed at foreign targets located outside of the United States, end quote. That's not true, is it, Scott?
No, it is not.
No. Microsoft is disgorging information on those located within America. And by the way, if this deal with Snowden is such a espionage blunder, makes America so vulnerable, telling the alleged Islamic terrorists, the alleged terrorists, but the fundamentalist Muslims in real life, that we are listening in on their cell phones and that we are paying attention to their use of the internet. If that is revealing state secrets, why did the U.S. government, all during the Bush administration, tell the world that they were setting their color code for terrorist advisories based upon the chatter, the communications both by phone and by on the internet of the Islamic terrorist groups, and that is exactly what they were doing to be able to establish whether or not the risk was high or low? In other words, didn't we admit that we were doing this very thing?
They did. And as far as the espionage angle of it goes, espionage is when you're getting information that you aren't given permission to have access to, and then turning it over to foreign governments that gives the foreign government a military advantage over the United States. That's their definition of what espionage is.
Okay, so with Snowden, as the system administrator, did he have authorization to everything?
Yes, he had.
Given access to everything, okay. Yes. And second of all, did he turn over a secret that was that had confidential spy stuff in it that was somehow divulging the United States' clandestine effort to thwart a specific terrorist act? Or that might make an American more vulnerable. Was there anything in his release that did that?
No.
No, all he did is say that, you know, he released a document signed by a secret court that gave the United States government the authority to go and capture information on ordinary Americans. So what he was with the document that he released said that James Clapper is a complete liar, that rather than this targeting foreigners outside the United States, that the United States was now spying on ordinary Americans. That's all he did. So if that is espionage, then who's the enemy?
It would have to be, by that statement, it had to be us, the American population.
That is correct. And by the way, did he turn it over to a foreign government, or did he turn it over to two newspapers? Scott's gone silent here on us, but the answer is he turned it over to two newspapers, The Guardian in the UK and to the Washington Post here in the United States.
Yes, I was going to say that. Somebody came up and asked me a question, though.
Okay. Rogers, who is the congressman who is head of the Congressional Intelligence Subcommittee, told reporters that there is not a target on Americans. Now, what he is doing here is repeating the same word that was used by James Clapper, target, target. That means that the aim is, in this particular plan, the scheme, may in fact be those who are not citizens. That may be the aim of the scheme. Now, he was careful to say he didn't do what Clapper said and add the outside the United States, because that would be an Clapper doesn't mind lying. He lies to Congress regularly.
Wasn't it Clapper's statement back in March that sent Snowden down this road because he lied?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. When James Clapper was asked by a congressman, are you collecting information on ordinary Americans? No. Unequivocally, no. That was an outright lie. It was perjury because he was sworn to oath. Now, with Rogers, he used the term target. Now, here's the interesting aspect of that. The whole concept of PRISM is not to target. It is not just a shotgun approach. It is comprehensive. It is, we're going to collect data. In fact, the Verizon situation was the same. We're going to collect data on everyone. We're going to cast the broadest possible net so that we don't have to target. Target is profiling. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. There are a few topics that will be discussed in America over the next decade as important as this one. It is in this topic that Americans have the opportunity to learn that their government is morally corrupt, that their government does not play by its own rules, that the government has decided that it is no longer bound by the Constitution that it has sworn to uphold. And as such, nothing matters anymore. Glenn Greenwald, who was the lead author of the Guardian piece, which broke this news a day or two before the Washington Post, told ABC's this week that the articles show that the NSA, the National Security Agency, has not leveled with members of Congress who have expressed concerns about the scope of the electronic surveillance. He said that Americans need an open and honest debate whether that's the kind of country they want to live in. These are the things the American people have a right to know, said Greenwald, a lawyer and civil rights liberties advocate. The only thing being damaged is the credibility of political officials and the way they exercise power in the dark. Yeah, that is really, 100% of what Snowden released. Not espionage at all. He was a whistleblower in the terms of the malfeasance of political officials, their criminal behavior and wholesale disregard for the rule of law, for the U.S. Constitution, and their willingness to exercise power in the dark.
So are you talking about waste, fraud, and abuse in the government?
This program is a waste. Fraud, yes, it's fraud, because any time that you lie about your commitment to uphold a document, in this case the Constitution of the United States, and you do the opposite, that's fraud. Now, I'm going to share one other thought, and then we're going to go into the whistleblower and Snowden, and whether or not we should be erecting statues to him and naming schools after him, or we should be seeking him as a fugitive who has
enemy
somehow made America, yeah, enemy of the country. Colorado Democratic Senator Mark Udall, who has long called for greater transparency in how the government collects data on Americans, said the legal authority should be reopened for the debate after this week's disclosure. So here's a Democrat, Senator Mark Udall. He's from Colorado. He happens to be a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee. He's not the chairman like Dianne Feinstein, but he's on that committee. And he's saying, you know, we ought to have this debate. Now that this man has done us the service of letting us know that our government is, in fact, renouncing the U.S. Constitution, that we ought to have a public debate on this. Udall said in an interview with CNN, that the monitoring this notion that is being promoted by the government now, that the monitoring, he's using the term monitoring, the collection of private data on keystrokes and telephone conversations, the notion that it has thwarted terrorist attacks is overblown. It's untrue. He says, it's unclear to me. Now, he serves on the Senate Intelligence Committee. It's unclear to me that we've developed any intelligence through the mega data program that's led to the disruption of plots that could have been, that could not have been attained through other means. Udall said that pushing back on assertions that both administration officials and Rogers that a specific plot had been stopped by the massive collection of phone records. Well, it's absolutely untrue. And Udall at least had the courage and conviction to say that it was untrue. In other words, not only did the U.S. government officials from the administration and both sides of the aisle in Congress and the heads of the largest departments in the federal government lie about doing this and violate their constitutional oath to do this and to approve it, their justifications for it, like Dianne Feinstein's, are a lie. Now, the Garden reported that Snowden grew up in North Carolina and in Maryland, and he joined the Army in 2003, but was discharged after breaking both of his legs in a training accident. He never completed high school, but learned his computer skills at a community college in Maryland. And as we talked about yesterday, that means that the one thing that was unique among Snowden versus all of those who are condemning him is that Snowden did not go to one of the liberal bastions of political correctness, and therefore he still had the capacity to exercise good judgment. In doing so, he looked at what the government was doing and he said, this is wrong. It needs to be exposed. I need to blow the whistle. We'll consider that when we return in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Diotta. We have Larry on the phone from calling in from Florida. This is really a sad story, isn't it, Larry? In fact, one of the things about this story is that, like so many others, Larry, that we have considered over the past year, is since you see Democrats and Republicans both justifying the unjustifiable, both Democrats and Republican being criminals relative to their sworn oath to uphold the U.S. Constitution and going after Snowden as if the man who did us this great service was the criminal. Boy, it's hard not to see conspiracy here.
Well, it's a sad thing because what we're seeing more and more of is just a, you know, the constant solidification of power at the top, and it's a sad situation because what they cannot vote in, they seem to be doing by government edict. They call it executive orders.
Correct. Yes,
and
in fact,
these,
so many.
Most of these are not legal. One of the things that scared me, and this is one of the things that I wanted to call about, I saw yesterday that the climate advisor to Obama said that we need a war on coal. Now,
yes.
I don't know about you, but I use electricity, and most of the electricity we get are from coal-fired plants. So if they have a war on coal, what's going to happen to us here?
Yeah, you know, the reality is that was such a sad debut. He did change from global warming to climate change, because there is now absolute proof that global warming is a complete hoax, a myth. And yeah. but then to say climate change, you might as well say sunrise. You know, we need to prevent sunrise. I mean, climate change is as common as is the sun rising over the horizon every day. And then to suggest that what is important to Americans is that we constrain fossil fuels is to say to Americans, I want you to continue to be wholly dependent upon the OPECers so that Islamic terrorism continues to be funded and you are ultimately destroyed as a direct result of not being self-sufficient in energy, which would be easy if we simply instituted the right policies in America.
I guess the problem I have with the whole climate change thing is that they've only been documenting it for 100 years now, a little over 100 years?
Well, not only have we only been documenting it for over 100 years, it's only in the last 15 years that we actually have the means to do it accurately and globally. We've set up some 3,000 probes in various places reporting to satellites around the world in the last 15 to 20 years. And so over that is the only period of time where we've actually had the capacity to do it accurately and consistently and globally enough to have a basis of information that you could make a determination. And during that period of time, you know how significant global warming has been?
Less than a degree, isn't it?
Oh, not less than a degree. Zero. Nothing. Not one iota. In fact, in the last 16 years, the temperature amalgamated from all of these various places around the world, now that we can precisely measure it, has not changed at all. That's a complete myth.
Well, the idea, of course, is to carbon tax everybody. That is
an aspect of it. The primary purpose of the global warming myth was exactly the same as the myth of a war on terrorism. In fact, had it not been for Muslims playing along and giving governments the ability to implement this new myth called the war on terrorism, the global warming climate change myth would have been the primary means that the elite would have used to confiscate power for themselves and to deprive individuals of their wealth and their freedoms.
Yeah, regulation, through Egypt, right, or whatever.
Right. So the whole purpose of this is to constrain your rights, to make you have less liberties and to give them more control, and then secondarily to redistribute wealth from those who earn it and produce to those who become dependent, so that they ultimately control everyone in a fascist society of lords and serfs. And so that is the purpose of the whole thing. It's a control. It's a liberal, liberal control mechanism. And to have him speak of that yesterday was extraordinarily sad, because everything he said yesterday was grotesquely untrue and counterproductive for America.
Hey, look, it's no secret now that the chemtrailing people are seeing is weather modification. And for these people to come out that are purposely manipulating the weather and come out and blame it on coal is the ultimate hypocrisy. It's a sad situation. It's out. The cat's out of the bag. I've watched them talk about it on videos and conferences. These people, you know, the Chinese 10 years ago were creating snowstorms, manipulating the weather. Yeah, I mean, right. It's all out there. You can do these things.
Yeah.
And so
whether or not it is man-induced, and certainly the U.S. government and the Chinese and the Russians and others have attempted to manipulate weather for a long time, some for good means, others for clandestine means. There's both the most spending by governments is for war, and so much of it is for negative means. But the reality is that Yosha specifically told us that one of the birth pangs, which is going to ensnare so much of Earth prior to his return, is going to be megaloseismos, which would mean everything from earthquakes to tornadoes to hurricanes to tsunamis would all be under the auspices of megaloseismos. Now, he didn't actually use those words. He spoke in Hebrew, but that's what has been translated into. And so we are going to see we're going to experience a very rough road as we move towards the end times.
And yeah, much of that, more taxes or being regulated by a government won't change that.
No. The solution is out of our hands. That was one of the things that my eldest son is a engineer. While he is now an aeronautical engineer, much of his study was on renewable energy. And one of the things that he used to articulate was that the issue with global warming, he says, you know, beyond the fact that it's probably not true, but if it actually was true, then the question becomes, was it caused by man or was it as a result of natural factors? And he says, no, the evidence suggests that that is principally by natural factors, that about 90% of that which we would consider to be climate change is natural factors and has nothing to do with man. He says, but then that still isn't the issue. The issue becomes, then, is man capable of averting such a global change if, in fact, the global change is occurring? And if so, what would be the cost of doing so? And so what he came to is, when you go through that process, is it man-made or just part of the overall system that we exist in our solar system? Is it man-made or systematic? And he says it's somewhere between 99 and 100% systematic and not man-made. And second of all, even if it is man-made on that component, do we have any capacity to make a substantial change, and at what cost? And he said you would literally destroy the fabric of economies around the world. And even if you were to do that, you can't make a significant enough difference to ever justify it. He says, so this whole idea of combating this as a human endeavor from an engineering point of view is a fool's folly.
That's ludicrous. It's like they stand up there, the political actors, and, you know, I can picture them being the high priest in the Aztec cults or,
yes.
You know.
He wants to be known as the savior. He wants to be the savior of the Muslims.
Kazam, you know.
Right. I want to be the savior of the Muslims. I want to be the savior of the earth. And I want to have control over life and death through my drones. It is all a God God in being complex that you see manifest here. Glenn is called in from Philadelphia, and Glenn would like to make a comment on Snowden. And I would like to return to Snowden because we're going to continue to talk about him next few days. Hello, Glenn. Welcome.
Good morning, Larry.
Yeah.
Good morning, Glenn.
To quote King Shlomo, there's nothing new under the sun. And there's one very important personage that's connected to all this stuff. The historical figure shouldn't be overlooked. And just as we see McCain getting involved with this Snowden thing and sticking his 2 cents worth in with Russia, McCain was a 1958 graduate of Annapolis. And head of his class was none other than John Marlon Poindexter. Mm-hmm. Who was actually head of the National Security Council under Reagan from 83 to 85. And he was also, you know, one of the major exponents of the DARPA Total Information Awareness effort at the time, which had the notorious all-seeing IFRS pyramid logo and Office IAO, which is itself a Freemasonic anagram. But so Poindexter was later also in the, and he skated on charges during the Iran-Contra affair. And then under George W. Bush, he became he was at the DARPA Information Awareness Office under George W. Bush. So this man's been, was instrumental, in fact, we had McCain, who's now retired, was instrumental in setting all this stuff up. If you look at his personal biography and that sort of thing. But this, so what we have is scandals. If you look at this man, he was instrumental in laying the 1990s foundation for all this stuff that's going on now.
Glenn, I just put you on hold because we have a really bad echo on your line. But the point that you're making is the one that now 2 days in a row you brought up things that are the least comfortable for me to talk about, and I'm just kidding with you here. But I, as Larry knows, and I am not a conspiracy advocate, and yet what you're saying here is true, that the today, the right, particularly conservative talk show hosts like Hannity, want to blame all of what we're seeing relative to the Spygate issues on Obama. But what you have accurately brought up is that the architect of this came to power under Reagan. And that he abused his power under Reagan, and he was also embraced under King George the First and the Second. And so that this is an issue that exists on both sides of the aisle, and it is conspiracy oriented. Hello, and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We're here with Larry, and I think Glenn has called back in on a better phone. But I wanted to speak a little bit about why I don't advance conspiracy theories. It's obvious that there are those conspiring, and that they conspire on both sides of the aisle, and therefore you ought not choose to be a Republican or Democrat and support one versus the other because one is somehow better than the other. They're only different sides of the same coin. The presentation that Glenn made regarding Poindexter, requires a great deal of knowledge and communicating a great deal of information before someone can even begin to render a decision as to whether or not there is a connection and whether that connection is meaningful or if it's a chance event. And then to establish a pattern, you have to go through 1,000 stories like Poindexter going through the various administrations being the predecessor of what we're witnessing now in prison. And in the end, what you find is that, yes, there are those that are manipulating the system to the detriment of the individual person. Now, the reason that I don't do that is that just the plain reporting of the news and talking about what is happening before our eyes is more than...
exposes it all.
Yeah, exposes it all, and it's more than sufficient to have you distrust your government. And so there really isn't the need to invest all of that time and mental energy in a process that most Americans aren't comfortable with anyway because it requires the application of logic and statistical analysis and probability. And rhetoric is not a skill that is taught anymore in school. Most Americans don't want to be judgmental. So I'm going to share with you something that just came across the news wire. Yesterday, we learned that the Supreme Court voted down aspects of the Voting Rights Act, and they said that everybody has the right to vote, and you can't have any restrictions on people's right to vote. Well, today they said your vote doesn't matter. What they said today is the initiatives, like those in California, where the voters voted to say that marriage had to be between a man and a woman, that their vote doesn't matter because they overturned their vote. So one day they say everybody has the right to vote. The next day they say, but your vote doesn't matter. Now, what's particularly bothersome beyond the hypocrisy of that is the realization that in a democracy, people do vote on the initiatives. That's the difference between a republic and a democracy. Is in a democracy, the average citizen makes decisions like this, whether or not marriage should be between a man and a woman, and they vote for the actual legislation. Where in a republic, you vote for people who make the actual legislation. And so this notion that America is a democracy is completely destroyed by the Supreme Court's verdict. Next, while the Supreme Court While the U.S. Constitution is extremely clear on the right to keep and bear arms, while the U.S. Constitution is extremely clear on issues regarding to search and seizure, the Supreme Court didn't bother to hear cases that were clear violations of the U.S. Constitution and overturn all gun control legislation and overturn the government's ability to spy on Americans as it's doing here in prison, which is clear-cut U.S. constitutional mandate, black and white, obvious the government is wrong. The U.S. Supreme Court has an obligation to intercede. But I want you to tell me where in the U.S. Constitution it gives the Supreme Court the right to make a decision on marriage. Where is it? How can you rule on the U.S. Constitution and an issue of marriage? Doesn't the U.S. Constitution say, here's the issues that we are allowing you the right to have control over, and every other issue, if it's not specifically listed here, then those rights belong to the people. So why how can the U.S. Supreme Court usurp the people's rights and make a decision on something that it has absolutely no right to review?
Well, I shouldn't be able to.
but yet they do, and no one seems to care. So now you have edicts based upon the vote of 9 individuals who seem to be wholly out of touch with the rest of the country.
I'd say that's true. I mean, look at the people up there. It's pretty obvious, you know. I mean, when you take a former dean of Harvard.
Yep. You know, it's the reason why they can make decisions that are so morally corrupt, so hostile to the best interests of Americans. And this young man, 29 years old, who didn't even graduate from high school, is able to exercise good and moral judgment and do the right thing. Something tragically wrong with the soul and mind of this nation.